witnesses will be dismissed in a few short minutes. Before then, we'd like to bring you a small portion of God's Word, which concerns, you know, perhaps the future of the church. We encourage you to take your Bibles and open them up, and although you have handouts with the verses on them, look at the context of the verses for more elaboration. And we hope this will be a benefit to you this week and perhaps the years to come. What we're doing is looking at the subject of why we lose young people. And actually, you might consider it a two-part. As parents, to look at, you know, what we can do to kind of help encourage our children, to train them up properly. And possibly even as parents, look at ourselves as children who had parents. And where are we now? You know, are we where we should be? Have we grown as much as we should? Have we let our prior life affect us to the good or bad? And this will bleed over into tonight of, if you're lost, who can you blame? And we'll be looking at that. For this morning, I had come to me in a minute. Brother Aruda, Dick, Reed, kind of break up the context of the reading. We're familiar with both passages, but I wanted to connect them. As we tell children, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Well, what are you supposed to remember? Well, what we all need to remember. You get to the last part of it, and that is, what is all of life about? The whole purpose of life, to fear God and keep His commandments. That's what parents should be gearing their children to do, what children eventually have to tell themselves to do, remind themselves. This is the whole purpose of life. That's it in a nutshell. Started early and ended up on the right, in the right place, fearing God and keeping His commandments. As we go through this, today more and more parents are brokenhearted over the loss of their children to either religious cults or drugs or just the world itself and its flow, lost from the service of the Lord. Many churches lose more than half of their young people, and not just from moving away to school or going away into the service or to take a job in another area. This is a loss of the next generation of capable young adults not interested in the things of the Lord, but more in the things of the world. What is causing such a falling away and a dropping out from the future of the church? What is bringing about such an apathy for spiritual life and heavenly perspectives? How can so many of our youth raised in Christian homes leave without ever looking back at the things of God? What we'd like to do this morning is consider some of those reasons, some of the heavier hitters. The first begins to be a lack of teaching. Here is one of those kind of light bulb moments where how can young people know what they, what is required of them, what they should be doing, what their life should be about, if nobody tells them? They're just clueless. Well, it's because, to begin with, perhaps the parents didn't. The best persons to do this for their kids is the parents, at least according to God. Now, we're kind of familiar with Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9. Most of the teaching classes we have, of parents, this is what the Jews were supposed to be doing, the law of Moses. When your child gets up, you talk to him about God. Yeah. You walk with him during midday. When they go to bed at night, you talk, you talk with him, you read scripture, you study, whatever. I'm not sure I know anybody that had ever done that. I mean, we look at it and go, oh yeah, this is the best way to get the child indoctrinated, But do we actually do it? Now, for some of this, it's kind of hard in the sense that since we send the children off to school, it's hard to walk with them at noontime. But I thought it was interesting in some books of how to get America back on track. The author suggested as one of the things that we need to do is to start homeschooling more. So that the children don't come under the influence of the worldliness of their fellow classmates or the humanistic agenda of some of the teachers' unions. Very few of us do it, though. We're caught up in perhaps both parents having to work or incapable of teaching children to a high school level. These are things that obviously are going to take a lot of work, planning, working out the details. But again, this is where the problem is. In order to lock the child in to a good, healthy lifestyle, thinking, dedication to God, it's got to start early. It's got to be consistent every day by loving godly parents. Now, even if you do that, we're going to get to the point where we'll look at, it still may not work, but at least you're going to have the odds in your favor. I mean, as you look at Romans 10, for whoever will call upon the name of the Lord will be saved. But Paul goes, how shall they call upon him in whom they have not believed? How shall they believe in him whom they have not heard? How shall they hear without a preacher? I mean, this was a consistent thing that Paul talked about in the first century. Why God sends out messengers, evangelists, teachers, preachers. Because the people have to hear. How will our children know if they do not hear? About Romans 10:17. So faith comes from hearing? I mean, we stop right there. Now, if your child doesn't have any faith, first question asked, has he ever heard about God? Further, the more of an ingrained habit the involvement of the work of the Lord a child has, the more it will be strange for him when he doesn't have it. If you have a child that's gone to church all of their lives, and then suddenly they're away from home, and Sunday comes around, and they're not at church, they should feel a little bit strange and like a fish out of water. I mean, that's the place they've always been on a Sunday morning. If you're not at church, what are you going to do with your Sunday? Making morals and ethics a fabric of their lives with a mentoring of their parent superseding any influence of school, peers, or state, and the chances of them remaining faithful to God dramatically increase the more we can sit down and mentor our children. Talked a little bit about this, the cults know this. Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he'll not depart from it. You've ingrained a good pattern, a good habit. And it's going to be hard for them to break. I mean, that's one of the things you have on your side. You get to the child early and you bring him up in a true knowledge of God and what life is about. And he's going to find it hard to pull away from that. If you've never done that, he's going to find it very easy. There's another obvious thing to be considered about parents. They need to be, cool, we'll use that word. They need to be able to handle the discipline in a way that doesn't aggravate the young person. You might say cool in the way of not losing their temper. If a child does something wrong, I mean, a lot of times parents, when they go to discipline them, they lose it. I mean, they get really emotionally involved and they just, it's almost like an anger that comes out. The child needs to be able to discipline very coolly. The teachers at school do it for the most part. When a child needs to be, they know what to do, what's the right amount of discipline. You know, whether the kid gets a timeout or gets sent to the principal, you know, there's degrees of it. And the child knows to handle it and even know how to use the peer pressure of the class in order to make the child behave. The parent needs to have that same kind of conception, the same kind of approach. You know, that as they discipline, you know, they do it not out of anger, but out of love. And the child should be able to sense this. That's what we put here. The instruction should be handled in such a way that the young person, you know, begins to really want to learn. That's the mark of a good teacher. That's one of the things that even, you know, school kind of drives out of our young people. I mean, the children come into this world and they're very enthusiastic. They're very, you know, they want to learn. I mean, it's like a child is everywhere. You know, his eyes are developing. The colors are coming in. It's just an amazing world he's in. And he wants to go everywhere and see everything and touch everything and eat everything. You know, he's working on his taste and his touch and his feel and his sight and whatever. And he can't, you know, he can't learn enough. You know, parents get sick of the word why. And somewhere along the line through the school system, we kill that enthusiasm. And somehow we have to be able to keep them fired up and enthusiastic and zealous for learning, especially about things that are good. And to be able to teach a child, you know, if you can, so they're not even aware they're learning. Or they think they're just on another adventure or, you know, doing something that's another game. But they're learning things that are practical and useful. Okay? Now, perhaps in our own conception, we think that school is more important than church. Okay? We'll force the child to go to school and do his homework, but we won't force the child to go to church and do his classwork for here. Okay? Now, go back to our opening passage. The whole duty of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. Now, when this life is over, which do you think is more important? What he's going to learn in church or what he's going to learn in school? I'm not saying that some of the things that he's going to learn in school aren't important. He needs to learn a trade, learn, you know, whatever, you know, getting well-rounded. But there's certain things he shouldn't learn in school, and there's things he definitely has to learn from God, because this life is short. James says it's a vapor. What we're trying to get him prepared for is another life that goes on forever. And you need to prepare him for that more than the life here. If you can, do both. But you know, if you have to take a choice, you know, err on the side of what is absolutely vital. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Hebrews, okay? The Lord disciplines those whom he loves. This is what we should be learning from God. He disciplines us, he trains us, he teaches us because he loves us. Okay? If we're good Christian parents, our children should sense that same thing in us. So, dealing with hypocritical parents, big problem. One more thing about parents is, you know, your children know when you're not the same person Tuesday as you profess to be on Sunday. Okay. Does your Christianity flow over into the rest of the week? When they see a difference between practice and profession, they soon lose respect for their parents and the religion they profess. Many people are turned away from the church because of hypocrisy. The young will walk away too and justify, well, at least, you know, like anybody else will say, at least I'm not a hypocrite. Okay. But it's a wrong turn. Okay. You don't walk away from something just because somebody's a hypocrite, especially if it's the things of God. Just ignore the hypocrites and do what you need to do. It's not an excuse. You know, God has warned us. There's always going to be hypocrites in the congregation. There's always going to be tares among the wheat. Okay? It's not a perfect society yet. Your job is to make sure you're not a hypocrite. Matthew 18:6. There's this warning that Jesus gave. Whoever causes one of these little ones, he's talking about, you know, there's several contexts that have this kind of subject. Sometimes it's a little child. Sometimes it's talking about a young convert. Could be an older person, but a new convert. Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it is better for him that a heavy millstone be hung around his neck and that he be drowned in the depth of the sea. This is a warning to us in the church to make sure how we deal with those that are fairly young and tender in the faith. To turn away the children for one reason or another. Let me give you some examples. The last place I was preaching, it's one of the reasons why I kind of shed, you know, taking vacations, because all this kind of problem seemed to happen when I take vacations. Although this is a better group, if I can trust you. But where I was, it's like we had a police officer who was sort of uptight, and there was a young person, junior high, and they came to services in sort of baggy clothes, and he took this young man aside and read him a riot act of wearing kind of gang clothes. Now, I knew the kid, young person, sweetest boy you'd ever know, had no leanings whatsoever to gangs or anything else. He went home crying. That young man is married and he is not in the church at this time. There was another person, young individual, college age. He had some strange ideas. I worked with that kid for a year. Got him all straightened out and started working on his parents. And again, went on vacation. I came back and someone decided to take the liberty to tell them their kind wasn't appreciated in the congregation. I've never wanted to hit a member so hard. We can, by stupid things we say, unloving things, thoughtless, uncaring things, find ourselves in condemnation. I mean, when Jesus says, you know, better that you go take a big millstone, tie it around your neck and throw yourself in the sea, it'd be better for you than you did that. Because you don't know the consequences. Not only to the person you turned away, but to their family. I mean, they're going to tell their family. That young man I told you about, he's now married with child. How far has that affected him? To the first and second generation. So, be careful how you conduct yourself at all times as a Christian. Never knowing who you're going to affect. Matthew 23, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees. That woe is just to let them know you're already condemned by the things you're doing. Hypocrites, for you tithe the mint and the dill and the cumin, and you have neglected the weightier provisions of the law. He's using an example here of herbs and crops. He said, here's what you're doing. You're like a woman who's got this little tiny herbal farm air window. And these are the things you're dedicating to God, these little tiny plants. And you're leaving off the bigger things of justice and mercy and faithfulness. Okay, what are we really trying to accomplish here? I mean, what we're doing with God is big things. The things we're trying to teach are what alter the course of nations, families, whole disciplines of societies. They're powerful things that God has given us. And we treat them lightly, we leave off the weightier things and just kind of do things that are religious. Now notice what Jesus said. You should have done both. Even as you're involved in the justice, mercy, and faithfulness, don't forget the dill, the mint, the cumin, the little things that are nice, that give spice to to whatever. You're the salt of the earth. Not just the light, the salt too. Be careful how you conduct yourself because you never know who you're affecting. In fact, we can go a little farther here. It's just something that's kind of bothered me, a trend of young people. I've known, you get the dating age, okay? Church is not a place to start petting, to have your hands all over the person you've brought. First of all, you're starting to, you know, show them a bad influence. That's not the way the church works. Okay. Further, this is something that's kind of hard to understand among young people professing to be Christians. When I, if I've heard about it, everybody knows. Because I'm usually the last person that knows what's going on in a congregation. So if I hear about it, you know, there's no secret. So if you've been sleeping with somebody, everybody knows about it. If I know it. And I don't understand young people, you know, supposedly Christians, that, I mean, you're sleeping with somebody, and then you bring them to church. What's going on in your head? Especially if you've done that to multiple people. You're giving the church a bad reputation. You know, you're acting like you're in the world, but you're trying to, you know, say, okay, this is okay, you know, as you come here. You know, this is what you get excommunicated for. Disfellowshipped, however you want to put it. That kind of behavior is not acceptable in the kingdom of God. Or to bring somebody, you know, so the young people that come, you know, to the classes, and then behave yourself, you know, like your mission in life is to disrupt, you know, the classroom and make sure the Bible doesn't get taught. Why did you bring your friend? I mean, you have taken young people and turned them off probably for the rest of their life and into eternity. I mean, the warnings here are for all of us at all levels and all ages. When you became of an age of accountability, and the Jews recognize it about 12, and it's going to vary a little bit. Catholics recognize confirmation about, you know, 10, 12, something like that. What are they saying? Basically, you know, and even God says, roughly, you're at the age of accountability. You've just become an adult. Unfortunately, our culture kind of encouraged you to be an adolescent to the time you're 30. You still want to play games, you still want to act silly, you want to act really irresponsible. When you come of an age of accountability, God says you're a man now, or a woman, fully grown, fully responsible for your actions and your thinking. You better start showing it. Because you're of the age of condemnation too. You know, the fornication, the adultery, all that kind of stuff, it's no longer games. It becomes a reality. They are crimes against God, and He's going to hold you accountable for them. I mean, my generation, we're talking 50 years ago, you know, we didn't hardly think about that in the church. I mean, even when I was in the service, I was over in Japan, and some guy asked me, why don't I go out, you know, and visit the prostitutes in the town like everybody else was doing? And, you know, sometimes you can come up with, you know, there's reasons why God doesn't want us to do things. You don't have to say, I'm a Christian and be holier than thou. I just told the guy, I don't want to use another person for my own gratification. That blew him away. Got him thinking about, what are you actually doing? And the fact, you know, I told him, my God's watching. I don't want to disappoint Him. You'd be surprised how impressionable and how good an impression you can make on worldly people. I never even stopped to think about it because they've never been taught. Therefore, you have to be careful of worldly friends. For good or bad, peer pressure is simply that. It's pressure. It's like, you know, having 10 friends standing on your shoulders. It's easy to get flattened out. Did I give you an idea? Okay, you're in a cattle stampede, you know, comes charging at you. There's only two things you can do. Okay. You better start running the same speed and direction that the cattle are going, which is what people do when they go along with the herd in the world, or you can find some high ground. You know, let the world sweep on by, and you pick your spot away from it all, because that herd's going to run into damage. Most herds do, because there's no intelligence in them. Yeah. Among animals, Indians used to hunt buffalo by driving them off cliffs. I mean, by the time the first buffalo gets to the edge of the cliff, goes, oh, start backing up, he's got too much pressure from the rest of the herd pushing them all over. Lemmings do the same thing. Those are big pats of rats. They go and they come up to rivers and they jump in the river and they swim across, you know, whatever, and everybody follows until eventually they come to the ocean, and then the first ones jump in figuring it's just water. They don't realize it's 1,000 miles to the shore. And all the lemmings just follow them all into the ocean and drown. Okay. Is that really what you want to be? A dumb buffalo or a lemming? Or would you just like to step out of the crowd and the peer pressure and let it do what it wants to? And we don't even have to be talking about animals. You know, we're talking about massive amounts of young people nowadays that make the news. I mean, they come out of sporting events, and what do? They turn over police cars, they break windows, they set fire to buildings. These are supposedly intelligent college kids urinating on who knows what. I mean, they're living raw, they're living crude, they're living, you know, as vandals, and they're not thinking. That's the crowd mentality. You know, you get more people in a crowd, as the number increases, the IQ goes down. Do you really want to stay with the world and do what it does? And, you know, and find yourself. I mean, is it dumb when the guys, you know, hauling off television antennas and looking at the cameras and waving to mom? I mean, how brilliant do you have to realize, you know, come the morning, you're going to be in a police lineup and your college career has just gone down the tubes. The chance of a job is going to be, you know, close to nil. These are things that God is trying to get you, you know, aware of, to grow out of. Everyone needs to consider the herd crowd they hang around with, especially the young people. This is right out of Charlie Gant. If you cannot change your friends, that if you cannot convert them to Christianity and a love for God, then change your friends. Get you some new ones, some that are going to help you be more stronger. I found as a young person, the crowds I hang around with, you know, even if I wasn't in the crowd, kind of off to the side, I'm the one that got in trouble, even though I didn't do anything. Yeah, I started to become a loner early. You know, when I did start hanging around with people, I started hanging around with people older than me. I figured that'd help me grow up a little faster. You got to try it. Hang around older folks. You know, especially 50s, 60s, 70. Man, these are people that have done some living, and they got some interesting stories to tell. If you look at an old person as just an old geezer or something like that, you know, that's just, you know, well, of no interest, boy, you just missed one of the best books you ever could have picked up. There's even guilt by association, whether you do something or not. 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. It's a proverb. Should be a modern-day bumper sticker. Keep away from bad people, or you're going to pick it up. Proverbs 24:1, do not be envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them. Get as far away from him as you can. Run if you have to. promote family togetherness with your home as a gathering place. Come up with some wholesome entertainment that is supervised. Do not let the world dictate your traditions, which should be godly. Good example from a friend of mine who was, you know, a preacher. His son was in high school. He was on the football team, and they were playing. They were in the playoffs, and their team won. And the boy came over to the sidelines where his mom and dad were there, and his sister, whatever. And he says, you know, the team wants to go out and they want to celebrate. You know, the guy was kind of smart. You know, he trusted his son too. He says, okay, you go ahead. We're going to go home and have hot chocolate. And the young person thought about it and goes, I think I will too. Knowing what his teammates were going to do and knowing that he liked to be around his family more. I thought that was impressive. You know, is your family such that your kids would like to be around you more strongly than any other people on the planet? Okay, there's also evil influence. We're surrounded by temptation, you know, in magazines, TV, movies, schools, office. One of the things I pointed out here, if temptation were not a viable tool for luring people off the world, the devil would have abandoned it a long time ago. Temptation is a strong thing. It appeals to those urges inside of you, desires, pheromones, hormones, whatever. You know, it goes, you know, circumvents the brain and goes right for, you know, making the body, you know, wanting to do things. And if our minds are not strong and our spirits are not strong, then we're going to give in to what the Bible says, give in to the flesh, the fleshly mind. Trouble is, with our advanced technology, is even more powerful than ever. We don't stop to think about this, but first thought about it, if you've ever seen the movie, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and they talked about pornographic pottery. Yeah. Before they had pornographic, you know, pictures, where did they put it? On the pottery. I remember, you know, understanding at one point in Japan, the emperor outlawed any kind of pornographic porcelain. You know, any artist that painted a pornographic picture on a plate to be fired, okay, he was arrested and executed, along with anybody that sold it, because they realized the effect that it had on the empire. Now, we don't have just singular pictures just drawn. We have, you know, real people posing for these things, and not just one person picture. Full magazines, okay, websites. Someone once said that there's something like 680 pornographic websites appearing every day on the internet. Man, you haven't got a chance. I mean, they not only show you the picture, they take you through the whole operation. You know, in the movies and stuff. Man, it's just the influence is there. Or the drugs. You know, the manufacturing. And they're nothing new. Opium dens have been around for like 3,000 years before Christ. All we have is modern-day opium dens. And it's just, it's manufactured faster, you know, more incredible, you know, more powerful, whatever. You know, you can take some of these drugs, the crack cocaine, just once, and you're addicted for life. They're that strong. Yeah, if you haven't got a chance, don't get involved at all. And protect yourself. Especially from your friends. If a friend gives you a drug to take, even if it's free, okay, he's not your friend. If your friends take you out drinking and then allow you to get in your car, they're not your friends. And you're an idiot. God just asks you, stop and think about what you're about to do. Think. That's what he gave you a brain for. Think. Or you're going to fall under the influence. Guaranteed. You're going to be one of the statistics that's way up there. Abstain from every form of evil. King James says every appearance of evil. It's trying to tell you, abstain from every time evil appears. Get away from it. Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but expose them. Your job is not to succumb to all this influence. Your job is to, you know, get on a white charger, you know, with your lance and flag and go out and defeat these things. Expose them for what they are. Rescue your friends. Save them. Your family. Your nation. Your church. For as he thinks within himself, so is he. If he says to you, eat and drink. If your friend offers you a drink. Your friend offers you a drink. Tell you, being pure, it's going to save your life. When I was in the service, there was times, you know, I'd go out with the guys, the NCO club or whatever, and I'd order a Coke, and they'd all order their beers and whatever. And one time I went to the restroom and I came back, and I'll tell you, the minute I lifted up that Coke, I knew it'd been doctored. Knew it. Why? Because I hadn't had my senses dulled like the rest of them. I could smell it. Inside. I've had people come to, you know, services and think, oh, well, everything's fine. But I can smell the cigarettes on them. I can smell the beer they've been drinking. You know, they don't smell it anymore, but I can. Anybody else hasn't, you know, become addicted to the stuff or, you know, imbibed in it to the dulling of their taste buds or senses. Okay, come on, come on. It is good for a man that he should bear the yoke in his youth. Back to the youth. The yoke. Do you know there's times, especially when life was short in this country, where, yeah, people did get married young, but they also assumed responsibility young. Before they were 20, you know, even in early teens, they were out doing the jobs of a man. They were working in the lumber yards. They were looking on the river boats. They were out herding cattle. They did a man's job and they wanted to be considered a man. Nowadays, they don't do men's jobs and they want to be considered grown up when they're acting like children. Better the yoke. Get in a yoke with God or an older person or whatever, work with someone that's going to keep you honest, pure, decent, whatever. Choose that. You know, be smart. To let a child do what they want, especially when their mind is not fully formed and they have little perspective of the world around them, is to abandon them to an undisciplined and unloving life. I don't know how many children, you know, how many parents let their children do what they want. Man, talk about a prescription for disaster. First of all, the child doesn't know what he wants. He doesn't know what's best for him. You know, he'll eat candy all day. Okay? He'll eat himself sick and wonder why. They don't know how to feed themselves properly. They don't know how to exercise themselves properly. They don't know how to make the right choices in life. And you're going to let them just kind of wander off and do their own thing? Bad parent. Bad. Those who do not know history are condemned to repeat it. Good quotation. Okay. Don't learn history just for the sake of learning history. Start asking a question, why did they do this? Why? Okay. The way our country is going, I've heard more people say, well, I don't see anything wrong with socialism. Really? That's because you don't know history. Okay. There's some good essays by Batziat, 1850s, because he could see socialism moving into France, and he made some good, clear arguments as to why they shouldn't accept it. It makes a dull society. It takes away all initiative. It makes a people dependent on others. It takes away your freedom. Okay? And it's considered legal plunder because those in charge start to take away the what people that are hardworking with initiative have earned and takes it away from them and gives it to the people that don't do anything just so they can buy a vote. Then eventually, the entrepreneurs decide, why bother? You get a country that goes flatline, wants everything and does nothing. Okay, that's the problem with Greece now, Italy, Ireland, you know, all of these. Why are they going under? Because it doesn't distribute the wealth, it distributes the poverty. Okay. Socialism is the soft step toward communism, toward totalitarianism, toward fascism, toward Marxism. Okay. Wake up. Know how what history is going to do to you. Why people do things. Okay. Paul says, of Satan, we are not ignorant of his devices. What Christianity is trying to do is give you an insight of how the world works and what it's trying to accomplish. And boy, when you understand it, it's a rude awakening, and it gets scary. We learn from history that we never learn anything from history. People die fighting for our freedom, and then we just give it up. Church problems. Too many churches are filled with fussing. Most of it involves petty things, personalities, opinions, power struggles, cantankerousness. It only turns away young people, but also older ones too. You know, we've got to make sure the church remains pure from the world and set up the way God wants it to. Loving, caring, growing, you know, in knowledge, wisdom, grace. Often many preachers are run out. Forget that. I want to get down to, since I'm out of time. John 13, Jesus says, I give you another commandment, to love one another. I mean, by this time you go, didn't he already give us that commandment? Even didn't the Old Testament say we should love one another? Difference. Even as I have loved you, that's the difference. Now your love is on a higher standard. Can you love the way Christ did? Can you give up your life for those souls that need saving? For friends and enemies? Yeah, that's true love. Okay. And then something that's going to go with tonight. Okay. When it boils down to it, tonight we're going to talk, who can you blame? But just Galatians 6:5, for each one shall bear his own load. Okay. Sometimes, I mean, and these are even coming out in court cases. Oh, society made him the way they wanted, you know, that he is. He can't really blame himself. Society made him this way. Okay. You heard of the Twiki defense? Mm-hmm. Where one lawyer, you know, described that, well, this guy got, you know, I don't know what he did, murdered somebody or whatever, because he ate too many Twinkies. His sugar level was up high, and so he really didn't know what he was doing. You're right. Okay. When it boils down to it, it really doesn't even matter how bad your parents are. Okay. This is the example we have in Josiah. Here was a young person. I mean, his grandfather was Manasseh. So bad that God had him led off into captivity with fish hooks in his mouth. He was raised in an age of the Ahabs and stuff. In his period of time, the false gods were raised up in the high places. The Asherah were all around. There was a chariot to the sun god, you know, in the temple. There were actually male prostitution temple. Quarters built on top of the temple of God. And this young man at the age of 8 said, I'm going to serve God, and became the best king in Israel. When he held a Passover, it said there hadn't been a Passover celebrated like that since the time of Samuel, before the kings. All his life, he served God. He couldn't blame society. He couldn't blame his, you know, his parents or anything. Didn't have to. He made a decision to do the right thing no matter what. Looking forward to seeing that guy in heaven. Because it doesn't matter how bad of an upbringing you have, it still comes down to your decision. Bearing your own load, doing the right thing. Every course in life begins with a decision you make which way you want to go. Okay? And you alone are held responsible to that. Okay? Even under torture, you decide whether you're going to break or not. You decide whether you're going to defend your God and be strong and faithful or to give in. Your decision. Nobody can take that away from you. So don't blame anyone. Okay? Tonight, we'll look at that. For right now, if you realize that you need to serve God, okay, you've got to make a decision right now. Okay? And we're willing to help you with that decision. Yeah, you go, well, I really don't believe. We can sit down with you and give you like mountains of reasons why there is a God, why the Bible is Word. We can convince you. If you have just a slightly open mind, we can load you up with the facts that will convince you beyond a shadow of a doubt of the things of God. And we can increase your faith. If you're ready now, right now, to begin serving God, we've got some water just behind the screen. We can baptize you this very hour. And you can begin a life in service, pure, dedicated, cleansed of sin. If you've begun the journey and realize, you need all the help, well, that's what we're here for. Whatever, counseling, classes, prayers, just somebody to pal around with for a little bit. This is what we're here for one another. So that we can help one another, remain strong, do what's right, make the good decisions, and remember that the all of life is to fear God and keep His commandments. Get yourself to that point so that when judgment comes and the end of life comes, you're ready to face your Maker. Anything we can do to help, please let us know as we stand to sing.